I'm Fathery.
I'm Aaron.
And this is Text Trek.
And this is Drawn to Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 265th installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new.
And this is also Drawn to Trek, a Star Trek animation podcast brought to you by Trek Geeks, and it's episode 21.
And tonight we're talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 9, The Inner Light, written by Mike McMahon and directed by Brandon Williams. And it's a big episode.
Yes.
So I guess part one of a finale.
You can tell it's a big episode when we get screeners very late and filled with like big red text about not sharing information.
Yeah, please do not spoil.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but I think everyone was good. I didn't hear anything leak. So everyone was well behaved.
So.
We had some big surprises though. And we were kind of speculating last week, like, oh, they're acting kind of funny, you know, so they might be giving us some big surprise and we got it. So
Jill said, we said the inner light. It's actually the inner fight.
Did I say that?
That's what Jill says.
I did. I wrote the inner light in my notes. So everyone who's not watching us live, who is listening to this later, they're just like, Fathery, why did you say the inner light instead of the inner fight? But like, then they listen like another minute or two and then
they're driving on the road, yelling at the radio. Or yelling at the podcast player.
And I could have gone and edited that and fixed that and avoided that confusion for you, dear listener, but I felt like that was an important life lesson and not jumping to conclusions, so you're welcome.
Okay. So what did you think of this episode? You want to start that out? Or
in 1 second, just like a little bit of a quick housekeeping.
I'm leaving after this to go to a party, so my brain has sort of walked out the door already.
Aaron's already checked out.
Yeah,
but we're having a party. We're having a watch party on November 18th in a few weeks. So with all of the lovely Text Trek Patreon supporters. So if anyone wants to come watch Charlie X with us and have we're gonna have like a mock Thanksgiving celebration around an imaginary dining table in the mess hall of the Starship Texas, and watch a teenager with superpowers. Well, I always like Charlie X, but I don't know. Some people think it's like cringy. I don't know. They get like they laugh at it. They laugh at Charlie.
Stuff part is weird. That's probably, I think people kind of like find that odd.
It kind of has like that, like, that early season one TOS kind of like horror movie vibes. Like,
yeah, the way it's lit, especially.
Yeah, when you see someone walking around with no face, and it's kind of like that same kind of like monstrous imagery of like assault vampire or
The way I heard that was assault vampire, not a salt vampire. It's like it's
assault. Oh, those
vampire
would be an assault vampire would also be monstrous. I mean, that's arguably worse. That might be the worst form of vampire. So if you can help out in the Patreon, you come in as little as $2 a month. That helps us continue to do the weekly live show, and it will get you into the watch parties. If you can afford to be more generous, there's some additional perks as well. Check all that in the link in the description, wherever you are watching or listening. There's not really much else in way of news. I just wanted to give a shout out to Dr. Francis Smith, who I know like a lot of people in like the Star Trek fandom were friends of. He was a regular on the Star Trek cruise, and he had been at Star Trek, the STLV convention, at least the last two. I didn't know him very well. I didn't talk to him a ton, but I would just see him around at stuff over the years and would say hi to him. He sadly passed away this week, and it's gonna be weird, you know, not seeing him on the cruise in February. He's normally, you know, always kind of like the life of the party. He's always like talking to people. That's part of the reason why I never spoke to him much, because he was typically kind of chit chatting with someone else. But, cool dude.
That's sad.
But yeah, I think that's it. So, okay. Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4, Episode 9, The Inner Fight. I got it right that time, right? But okay, I'll refresh this episode for everyone by just reading the synopsis and then kind of expand on that with spoilers. But the official synopsis reads, Captain Freeman assigns the Lower Deckers an overly safe mission to try and keep a self-destructive mariner out of danger. And yes, it is because they are going on a mission to find Nick Locarno. The mysterious ship has been threatening ex-Starfleet officers. And so while they're doing that, Mariner is sent on a very safe mission to look at a buoy, like a weather monitoring station buoy thing. But we end up discovering that Nick Locarno is the mastermind behind all of the mystery ship abductions. I guess they're taking like the captains and first officers, it would seem like, and then it turned the ships over.
Thinking of the other people who were on that list, because we all keep looking at Nick Locarno.
Well, I think it's Locarno is recruiting them.
Right.
But I guess he might, I don't know, if he was like actually attacking them. I mean, maybe there might be something else going on in there. I don't know, maybe for some reason he's targeting ex-Starfleeters for an unknown reason.
Yeah, but, I don't know.
But yeah, so that was the reveal, and it ends with a bit of a cliffhanger with Mariner abducted by Locarno on the mystery ship. They kind of got some help. The Cerritos has some help with Ma'a and his, he's got a bird of prey and his, you know, crew of, I guess, Ferengi and Bynar and Orions all united together. So the Cerritos has some backup, but yeah, I guess we're going to have to go save Mariner in the finale. But before then, Aaron, what was kind of your broad takeaway on the inner fight before we get into the episode breakdown?
I like it. I especially like the fact that it's like, it was surprising. Like that was, you know, not surprising in a bad way. Like I know that there really isn't too many clues leading up to that specific person. Probably not any. You know, because that was the problem I had with the burn. There was like no way for you to figure out what happened. But in the burn, they were trying to figure it out and they would just sort of sprinkle it in. And this, it was like always in the beginning of every episode. And it just felt like it was setting something up for a later episode. So I didn't feel like I was missing something in between. It was just like, okay, all these things are happening and then we're going to find out what happens. So less of a mystery, even though it is a mystery inside of the show. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. It was surprising. There's, you know, real emotional moments and with Mariner in the cave. And yeah. I like the minimalist inside of the ship. What are the minimalists? Hell, it feels very 32nd century, actually.
It does. It made me think that. And also, it felt like a little like, I guess, just waking up in like a really mysterious minimalist spaceship. Like that has to be like a 2001 Space Odyssey callback, right? Like it's kind of like
maybe. There's a cactus in there, though. Stuff. I did notice that on the shelf. There's one little cactus in a terrarium.
I wonder if there's a meaning.
Yeah, I don't know. I just wonder if we're finding meanings in everything.
It's like, for me, for my opening statement on the episode as broadly before we go into the breakdown.
Mine wasn't a great statement. So.
I agree with you. Like that cave scene, right? The first time I watched it, I thought they were in like a tree. I thought they were in like the base. You know how like sometimes like those big massive trees you'll have on the West Coast, like you can like
redwoods.
Go up under the roots and stuff.
Yeah,
I thought it was that. And then like I looked at like the daylight shot and I was like, oh no, that's it's some weird space cave, I guess. But if you know, we didn't have enough of those last week.
I would say it was just funny that we just had a cave episode.
From minute 13, the timestamp, like minute 13 on this episode on Paramount Plus, from there until 18:30, that is 5.5 minutes of the best writing in Lower Decks I've ever seen. The Mariner Ma'a fight and then the cave scene and all of that stuff that they unpacked with Sito and just the questions it answered and it the emotional weight of some of that stuff. It just me, I'm a big Klingon nut, so if you're having to do like your kind of like trial by fire in a battle with like this Klingon and he's actually kind of you know, like giving you like tough love and helping you face like hard truths and grow and all that, you know, junk. I eat that up. So I loved all of that.
And also, and I love like, Nick, you know, not liking Klingon episodes. Some people like, you know, but a lot of it is the way Worf is. Worf isn't the average Klingon. So when you kind of take it, go into, you know, like, look at other Klingons, you're like, oh, those are kind of interesting. There's more balance to them. So I think that's kind of interesting. Like that guy was just like, oh, he looks like he'd be a cool person to hang out with, you know? He actually has some dimension to him, is what I'm getting at. It's like he's a character that has everything, it has something besides honor. At least the way he was speaking seemed like he had an experience that was beyond just throwing a batleth at somebody.
I love Worf, but he's very fixated on you know the things that he's going to worry about, and yeah, he doesn't kind of deviate from that much. But I also loved Locarno as the villain. I think he's like a great choice. I almost think he could be kind of like the ultimate choice for like the boss level baddie of Lower Decks. Like he could be like the final baddie. You know, he's like the ultimate, like, you know, the Starfleet slacker, the Starfleet, like, you know, bad kid who couldn't cut it. But maybe he'll be redeemed. I don't know what the hell they're gonna do. It could go in any direction.
That means it's not, there's no more after season five. So let's not say that. Or unless he comes back as the big, but maybe he disappears.
Yeah, he could go away and come back.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Maybe he'll turn good. Maybe he'll redeem himself. I like some Starfleet redemption. So I could roll with that as well.
It would be interesting to see what happens when somebody isn't redeemed, because we kind of explored that with Peanut Hamper, who eventually did get redeemed in the end.
Yeah.
So, but hers was more comedic. This feels more like has actual weight to it, especially because what he's doing is like kidnapping races.
They really build him up to be like a serious threat. So it's high stakes going into episode 10.
And it's interesting when you pointed out that on the Klingon Bird of Prey, there was a symbol, hit the symbol that he has on his jacket, which is the Starburst maneuver that they got in trouble for or tried to do.
He's still really into that. He's still into the covert Starburst.
I guess if I had noticed that, I would have figured out who it was earlier, just because, not by much, but by a little bit, because it's on the wing of that Bird of Prey.
Yeah. They don't really show it much like early in the episode, but I think they were trying not to give much away of it.
You and I were talking about it. I said, given the way that they're doing their titles and stuff, I'm going to make a guess that the next title is called The Last Duty, since we had the first duty.
I'd love that.
Yeah, and then just like maybe that's where he does, like, the last duty is to give your life as a Starfleet officer, maybe.
I think that'd be cool.
It won't be that then, because we thought of it.
Well, maybe it'll be something better.
Yes.
Hopefully it will be.
I have faith in Mike and crew.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. They don't need to listen to our dumb ideas. Starting off at the beginning of the episode, we're on Percyoff 9 and dealing with some venomous Trimble lizards with outpost scientists. I just like that the outpost scientists are just such like a recurring thing in Lower Decks. I just want like other Star Trek shows to start saying outpost scientists more, because they've always been around. You know, all the shows have shown these people. But
I finally realized what that bird, the little creature, reminds me of. It's a little bit like Josie the robot from the Jetsons, because it seems very mechanical at the top, and it's like, oh, that's what that looks like.
Yeah, I see it.
Very weird.
They don't look like lizards to me. Like, they look like birds. Like,
yeah.
I don't, like...
I guess birds and lizards share, you know, can share a lineage.
Like, they have, like, feathers, not scales, right? But then they have, like, little arms. So I guess they're kind of like dinosaurs. They're kind of like little T-Rexes. Yeah. But I guess
maybe dinosaurs... Maybe those aren't feathers. Maybe that's actually, like, some sort of scale or, like, skin.
I mean, they do look alien.
Yeah. There's,
I'm having a hard time describing an earth animal that looks like it. So. Yeah.
Think of a platypus, but all the different parts that you don't know.
Yeah.
It looks like a creature glued together from two or three other alien creatures.
They kind of, I look a little too mechanical. I kind of thought, like, it was kind of confusing. They kind of look like robots or something.
Yeah. It's because they're so, the head is so angular and like the curves of everything are just too precise, but yeah.
Well, yeah, kind of like a Jurassic Park thing. The fence goes down. The creatures are monsters.
They've made a couple allusions to Jurassic Park this season. Moopsie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like that they got like a little bit of science joke in there when Mariner had some of the acid blood on her, and she's like, oh, does anyone have any baking soda or anything with a pH above 7? I just loved that. I'm like, oh, look at this casual use of science in Starfleet.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. I was literally grabbing baking soda when that line came out, which is funny.
That's so
the second
something
time
like
I
that happened
it.
To me in real life. I was listening to something and like they said like the word like as I was writing it. Or is this,
oh
or,
yeah,
it was
that's always like, a weird feeling.
But it was like something that was like really like uncommon. Like how the hell did that? But I forgot what it was. But yeah, I like it when stuff like that happens.
I love their uniforms too. They're the old fashioned. They look very much like the TOS spacesuits.
Yeah, the Thulian web suits.
Yeah.
But I guess they have the scene in here just to reiterate that Mariner has been kind of crazy this season. I kind of feel like this is something that hadn't been, that could have been clarified better. Like, I mean, we did get like a few examples of it. I'm going to go rewatch the whole season, but I didn't really notice this being like, she had like increased her like dangerous activity to like a new level.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't picked up on that.
They could have like in between the Ferengi episode and this did a drop about that or something. Just like. Like, you seem to be getting, you know, more and more, I don't know, whatever the line would be. But
it's crazy, insane.
Yeah, you could just put, like, one line in there, and that would probably help bridge the gap.
Because they bring it up with Quimp on Ferenginar. When he's kind of, you know, saying like, you know, why don't you get your shit together and mature? But other than that, I really hadn't felt it had been. I kind of feel like right now I'm being told instead of shown. And we all prefer, you know, when you show and don't tell. Maybe it was there. I just wasn't picking it up on it, but I don't know. I watch all of these like 5 times every week. I watch the episode a lot, so I think I'm paying attention. What do you think of the conference room scene where they're discussing the missions?
Kind of like an intervention. Actually, somebody said that in the chat too, I think. To save Mariner. Yeah, there.
Mariner's intervention is being planned right here. So that's a good way of, that's a good, I guess, analog for it.
It's almost like a pre-rescue mission, I guess. It's sort of like just trying to keep her safe. But it was interesting. I like, you know, all the different ships and the different people that they're specifically looking for, which was cool because we found out that Thomas Riker is still alive. So he survived the Cardassian internment camp or wherever he was.
So I haven't checked it yet, but I am certain that if I go to memoryalpha.com now and look up the Thomas Riker page, it'll say status instead of saying unknown. It'll say, I don't know, it might still say unknown. I don't know, but I think it should say he's alive.
Yeah.
If he survived the Dominion War, there's no reason to assume something killed him.
But yeah, no, I really, and just the fact that, like, you know, we got Beverly Crusher, 7 of 9, you know, the nice name drops and stuff. It's feeling very connected to Picard season 3, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, totally.
I guess season 2, too, technically. I mean, it'd be cool if we actually had, like, Rafi listed on there or something like that. A character that we don't...
Well, she was still active.
That's true.
But, was she someone...
Time? Yeah, she
was. It was... Yeah, because this is before the...
Yeah. Before
the Mars stuff
went
bad. However, it is a little fan servicey that, like, they're all, like, people that we know from Berman era shows. It's like, shouldn't there be, like, some dudes we've never heard of that
Starfleet
would be worried
about? I said the same
thing
when they showed that list of all of the captains, and they had, like, Pike was listed on Discovery when they were, like, all the best captains or whatever.
Yeah, it was like, Pike, April, Archer, and Georgiou. Yeah. And it was, like, literally, really? Like, only the ones that have been established before this point.
It should have been shown, like, you could still keep scrolling it. Like, there was more of them or something like that. But yeah, that is the thing that Star Trek does. We've always made fun of that. And at times, they'll do something where, the rule of threes, where it's like, there's an Earth this, an Earth that, and then an alien thing. Like, they'll say, like, you know, or the Valerian swamp bat, you know, or something. It's like, they'll throw it something in.
Do you want to be a great musician like Beethoven, Jimi Hendrix, and the Lizard Man of Izargian 3? You know, something like that.
Right. So, I mean, it's not unexpected. It's kind of funny in a way.
But we get Girls Trip plus Boimler. So we're splitting the party here, which is normally, it's kind of like a dramatic move. That's kind of like your second act thing, you know, in like big story arcs, like, you know, Empire Strikes Back. You split them up in the other Star franchise. So we'll have our...
His status is now active on Memory Alpha.
Okay, good. So I give those Memory Alpha editors a hard time. So, kudos to them on being quick on this stuff. But yeah, as far as like the two different missions, we have, you know, the new Axton stuff that the Cerritos goes on, and then we have the thing that the buoy leads to. So the new Axton stuff's not a ton to chew on, so I think we should knock that out first.
I should have just had the words rearranged from Tatooine into some other word. It felt very much like
that. Is that what new Axton is? What do you call that when you rearrange letters? Is that an anagram? Anagram?
No, I don't think there's not enough T's and but
oh yeah, there's no X in there.
Yeah. Tatooine X.
I was kind of in denial about this planet because everyone online is like, oh, it's so Star Wars. I'm like, it's not Star Warsy. Quit comparing everything in Star Trek to Star Wars. We have our own crime planets. We go to some scummy, you know, hives of scum and villainy.
It looks like Blade Runner, not Star Wars.
Yeah, it is a Star Warsy planet. Yeah. I just have to accept it.
Before the show, I tweeted out a picture of the little moon shuttle that they arrive in. Mm-hmm. It looks like a prototype, an earlier design of Carter Winston's ship from The Survivor, the one where we first saw Vendorians. But it also looks like the side view of a land speeder. Like, a lot.
that Luke drove around.
Which can't be, like, a coincidence. It's the same colors and everything, too, so.
And the people that they call when they're like, can we have permission to land on your planet? And they kind of...
Very imperial.
They have English accents and very, like, the Star Wars imperial, like, caps and stuff.
And there's two suns that we can see in the sky, so.
But I did laugh at it's kind of like I've been this guy. I've been Freeman on the Cerritos, or like I'm trying to get in. Like, okay, this is where like all the cool people are, and I'm pretty sure I can
talk
my way in there. And yeah, just like, hold on. Why are you wasting my time even trying to talk to me? Wait. Let me go run over here and like take care of these people. Like, oh, how are you doing? Come on, right this way. So it's like I've had that feeling, and it is pretty funny to see Freeman go through it. But it's all acting from her when she's just like, oh, I can't believe this guy. Like, that's all a performance. So good acting. From her.
I'm super happy that this season we've seen her be a really competent captain and not just, I hate, you know, bonus time. Not bonus time. Was it the
buffer time?
Buffer time. Yeah. It's just like, which doesn't, you know, make any sense or whatever. But no. So I think she's really kind of really stepped up. And I think it feels like internally in the story that Starfleet has sort of noticed that, too.
I think it comes from the end of season two. When she was offered the a bigger ship and she turned it down, she's like, "No, I'm a Cali class girl. I'm staying here on the Cerritos."
Yep.
So I think when she shifted her ambitions from trying to get a more prestigious ship to just trying to be the good captain of a good crew.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. Like, yeah, that's growth.
Lost
her
some
part.
Of the stress of having to deal with that, and her natural talents shown through a little bit more.
Yeah, she's not worried about trying to impress the brass all the time anymore.
Yeah.
So they should really like up. And there's still another episode in the season, so maybe they will. But I would kind of like them to kind of, shine a light on that a little bit and kind of just have a scene of her talking about that to someone. I think would be really neat. What do you think of Zorkies and Muds?
I like the Muds is funny because, they mention, there's actually a on the right-hand side as they come in, the tripedal people have like
Adosian
a discount. We see an Adosian, which is kind of cool, and some other thing, which
I
think we've seen that creature before.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a name. There's several aliens in Lower Decks that have not been named. Like they're the bouncer at the bar who won't let them in. Or I'm sorry, because a bouncer and a doorman are like different.
Yes.
A doorman at the bar. But we've seen that dude. We've seen his race before, but they don't have a name.
Mentions that jippers are on sale, or there's a discount on them, which is what Mike McMahon actually wrote the short trek of Mud, where he had all the different robots, and they mentioned jippers as some sort of drink.
Yeah, so Mike McMahon's the inventor of sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
Yeah. Sorry, that might have been a Gornig, but
that's okay. I like to repeat myself a lot. Also, that's okay. I like to repeat myself a lot.
This was funny. Silly, but funny.
Our information broker, which is not a puppet, but you assume when you see how this thing is like lit sitting on like a table with a red tablecloth, like you're clearly like presenting an object right here. Like, look at this thing. Not person, but it was a living being that had a weird mechanical movement that the animation on was hilarious. And for whatever reason, when he got pissed off and was like, I wasn't going to sell the Locarno information, but now I'm going to sell it to someone else. And when he sticks his arm out with the isolinear chip, just like the weird little like stiff mechanical movement of the arm, just like that was so funny. That made that stuck the landing of the gag for me.
Now we know what Baylock patterned his puppet after. this creature, this race.
That was an incredibly accurate puppet. Like, good job.
That was pretty funny.
He's got bones and internal organs and all kinds. Yeah, just the way that she's like slamming him on the table. Yeah. It's just like, Jesus Christ, stop.
Like if she picked it up, she'd feel like, oh, this is an actual being.
And maybe she knew that. Maybe she was trying to get him pissed off so he would sell it to Billups.
That could be.
And she's like, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to insult this guy. Treat him like it's weird to say out loud. Like, I'm going to treat someone like they're a puppet. But maybe that was her plan.
Well, she has had kind of experience with that when we had Kayshawn turned into a puppet.
she's had an officer under her command get transformed into a puppet. And then she had to order a cat doctor to reverse that.
Yes. How that happened, we don't know.
Yeah, apparently it's not that hard, but
that's crazy.
Dr. Tiana is probably like a super good doctor, but like she doesn't want to like have to like do a lot more work, so maybe she just keeps some of the I found the puppet reversal cure, but I'm just gonna keep it to myself.
I don't want to write a paper about it. Actually, that was a joke at one point. It's like I think it was really early on in the series where it's like, oh, then I have to write a paper about it. And, you know, they're like, they're just that might have been the first episode.
Yeah, I remember that coming up, I believe.
Yeah. So, yes, that does sound exactly like her. I have a doctor who's very similar in some ways. The same attitude and everything. Very, very blunt.
I liked that. I kind of like that, like, Freeman didn't tell Shax and Rutherford what was going on, because I was just saying she was a really good actor, but they might have, maybe they weren't, maybe they would have. Shax probably has like some like security training. He might have like some undercover skills, but I don't know. But like Billups and the bounty hunter, that armor, like I want to cosplay as that, but I don't have like the costuming skills to make anything anywhere near that elaborate. So
you could probably find stuff to put together. I mean, the other thing is just making the helmet. Like,
there's one specific Star Trek character, and I don't think I've said it publicly who it is. I probably have at some point, but I don't know. I kind of want to be low key on it until I pull it off. But there's one specific Star Trek character that, like, I really want to dress up as, but I want to do like I want to have like a screen accurate costume that's like pretty elaborate and pretty good.
Okay.
I'm saving up for that someday, but I think y'all like it. But if I pull that off, then maybe someday after that, if I get better. I don't know, if 3D printers become like a lot more like easier to use and could do like everything I need, cool. maybe I'll have a bounty hunter Billups cosplay someday.
It'd be interesting if you could do something where you scan yourself in so it has the baseline, and then whatever you design, like clothes or whatever, to it, like, it will automatically adjust it so it will fit. Like, you could design it and then it like scales it correctly.
That's what you could probably do in Star Trek. You just tell
that's the computer, what AI has your should be used for, not for writing other horrible.
We're trying to like take people's jobs. Yeah. AI just like make cool shit for us.
Help that's us with our cool do. Shit. Yeah, exactly. But Rutherford, I think probably also it's good that they didn't tell him, because he would do something, I'm sure, not on purpose, but
yeah, he gets excited. He might spill the beans or something. What do you think of them including Rutherford on like this like senior officer mission, though, instead of like going with the other people? Like, I kind of thought that was kind of neat.
Well, there's something about like the ship, like he's really good with like with AI technology, what we just talked about, but he seems to be kind of like their ship guy. And I know that seems weird given that they're all in engineering, probably a ship person, but he seems to have like outside the boundary of normal Starfleet purview of like of ships, if that makes any sense, you know, things that he had made, and they might have that information. I'm just like, I think given that they're looking for this weird, you know, alien ship, having him along would probably be advantageous.
And I also think if, you know, you're looking for Locarno, like, he's Rutherford, young Rutherford is kind of similar to Locarno, how they're both kind of like, you know, real cocky pilots and stuff.
Yeah, I can see that.
But it seems like, they are lieutenants, not ensigns. They're like, they're going on like the same missions that the captain is on, stuff like that. So it kind of it makes them feel like a little bit more like they're more senior in the in the ship than previously. But you know, I don't know. I don't have anything. I laughed when the dude added 30 minutes to their weight. Yeah. I thought when you know, on rewatch, when Freeman's like really pissed off when she's told like go park on the moon, she's just like set a course for the moon. I was like, oh yeah, it's like that. Freeman is just playing the character in that, and I was like, okay, that's cool. And the fact
like
she
said early on too about like it's like going back, and I'm like, okay, I could kind of see that as sort of a tell. It was just something about like her class that she took or something, where she's like, I know how to deal with this, you know, like, so. She really did. It's just not the way that we were thinking she was.
Well, anything else on New Axton before we move on over to Sherbal 5?
No, just kind of your standard Tatooine.
Sherbal 5, we have the buoy mission, which Mariner was like, oh, cool, this can be dangerous. And then she gets there and she's like, oh, this is actually like really boring and lame. But Tindy notices the communications had been tampered with, and then their shuttle's destroyed by a bird of prey, and they have to emergency beam down to Sherbal 5.
They emergency beam very quickly.
Although, I will say that in rewatch, when you see like their reactions on the planet's surface, they are all kind of like surprised, like touching themselves, like feeling like their chest and arms, like, oh my god, we actually made it out in time.
Yeah.
Like, they all thought they were about to blow up, so it kind of played fair with that. I thought that was a really cool shot when the bird of prey decloaked in front of the shuttle, and did like their Chris Westlake's Klingon theme he composed for Lower Decks. And you get like that cool Star Trek 3 sound effect of the bird of prey decloaking. I like this ship being respected, this ship from 1984 that's become like so iconic in the franchise, and yet it's still shown off to be pretty badass here.
And that is where you also can see the starburst maneuver on that the wing. On I don't the, know why I did not wing. See that before.
It's probably going to be more visible in episode 10, and they didn't want to like show it off too much here.
But I mean, I'm just surprised I didn't catch it before later, I guess, is what I'm getting at. It's like I would have noticed it. Or as we said, it's not necessarily the Starburst maneuver. It is actually a top down view of the Millennium Tower from Millennium Gate from Voyager. So what was it? We had our theory that it's actually when Locarno is one of Janeway's relatives.
Oh, yeah. Then we had like the other theory. I'm going to save that for the end. Okay. Theory I'm talking about.
Yes.
When they're stranded on Cherbel 5 with all these other Star Trek species, though, it's kind of cool. Like, you're like, oh, there's a Romulan and a Ferengi and all these different people running around.
Matrix Zero. And then there was that one where Worf, like they had the Romulan and Klingon people living together.
Oh, yeah. Birthright, I think. Birthright parts 1 and 2.
It's got those sort of vibes to it.
But this is what I wanted in Star Trek Beyond, when they're all stranded on that planet. When Scotty meets Jayla, and then there's like those kind of thuggish aliens that like approach them, and there's like one like little guy who's kind of talking shit, and then he's got like two big enforcer guys with him. I was like, man, wouldn't it have been cool if they were using like legacy Star Trek races? Like the little guy could have been a Ferengi, and then like one of the big guys could have been a Nausicaan, and then the other big guy could have been a Klingon or a Gorn or you know, anything. Just
probably whatever. Not like, a Klingon.
But we'd all eat it up. Like all the fans would be like, oh, cool. Like, you know, this
that
is...
was the 50 new races for 50 years of Star Trek or something that year or something like that.
Director Frank Lin said to celebrate 50 years of the franchise, he would introduce 50 new alien designs into Beyond, which, okay, cool. Frank, I'm glad you want to celebrate our 50th, but what if
celebrated the 50th? Like, it seems like more than the Paramount did outside of the movie.
I would have been like, I'm going to celebrate by sticking in, I'm going to sneak in 50 legacy races that you already know from Star Trek. Go see Star Trek Beyond and see if you can find all 50. If you can't find them all, go buy another ticket and see it again. So you could have promoted your movie that way, Franklin.
Yeah.
But that was the 2010s, and it's like, we don't have much Star Trek. We just get like a Kelvin movie every 3 or 4 years, and that's it.
Is his name Justin Lin, the director?
Oh, yeah, his dad was Franklin, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Justin.
It's like I interviewed him, I think, for like 4 seconds. I'm like, I know, I like thought I had his name right.
Yeah. Also did. I don't know if I've seen any of his other movies. I know he directed some Fast and Furious stuff, and I don't know what else he's done other than Star Trek Beyond. But
yeah, when they led with that in the press conference, I'm like, oh, no.
I was like, oh, J.J. Abrams left to go make Star Wars, and he's going to let Star Trek turn into Fast and Furious. And
yeah,
I was also concerned, but, you know, Beyond turned out to be good. And
yeah.
I know a lot of people who like they consider that like their favorite of the three Kelvin movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think this would have been cool there. Just like all these different races interacting. And again, like with Chris Westlake's Klingon theme, when you see Ma'ag get trapped by the Ferengi and the Romulan, we don't know that it's Ma'ag, but they're playing fair. It's kind of low key, but you hear that Klingon theme a little bit right there at the beginning. So they're kind of telegraphing like, oh, this might be a guy that we know. But I liked the Romulan treachery. I liked Mariner, whatever she says, like, oh, not so tough when you haven't tricked somebody. the scrappy Mariner was a little intense, like her obsession with like seeking out danger and stuff.
The picture that you have up on screen for the audio listener, it's the Cardassian looking like super, super aggro.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of like when Garak was like on drugs to make him insane and stabbing people and stuff, and it turns into a horror movie. That's something.
Or a Batman, the animated series villain.
Oh yeah, that could have been someone on that show.
Yeah,
but the Cardassian was funny because I like when T'Lyn nerve pinches him and takes him down. I like her being just the nerve pincher, like Spock. Mm-hmm. Like I never wanted to see Spock like physically fight people. I love like in Strange New Worlds, they don't have like Spock doesn't go around like swinging punches. He just neck pinches. That's all he does. You know, very elegant. But as soon as T'Lyn neck pinches the Cardassian, you can see in the background like Mariner gets like mad. She kind of gives like the side eye to T'Lyn like, right before.
I wanted to beat her
up. I could have. Yeah, I could have handled that Cardassian. You know.
Yeah, I like how she just sort of walks into the room and does it. Like, there's very, like, very subtle and...
I would think by now that
people would be like, oh, no, it's a Vulcan. I should not, you know, get out of the way.
Yeah, I got to stay outside of arm's reach or they will make me take a nap.
Why don't they just have, like, you know, armor or something?
Oh, yeah, just put some stuff on your neck, like a neck brace, maybe? Yeah. If you try to fight a Vulcan wearing a neck brace, they won't be able to pinch you.
They probably have other nerve pinches in different places that we don't know about. I can pinch your ankle.
But it was good to see Talyn back after going
yes.
three whole consecutive episodes of no Talyn. I never want to do that on Lower Decks again, ever. Please. It's too much.
I did like when it's like, you know, we can fight anything. Bring it. It's like, well, before anything is brought, should we? The way she said that was really funny.
We had to go, what? They introduced Talyn in episode, I think, 16 of the show.
And yeah.
Yeah, Wage Douche was in season 2. So, it's, yeah, so we went 15 episodes without Talyn. And then we had to go, what, like another 14 or so before like we see her at like the end of season 3. And now we just went 3 episodes. I never want to have to do 3 again. So if the Lower Decks team can make that happen, I'd really appreciate it.
But to be fair, like when she's not there, it is actually working. It's not like, yeah. It doesn't feel like somebody's missing. It's like maybe if she was there, that extra puzzle piece wouldn't work.
Have they ever done an episode that didn't have Rutherford or Tindy in it?
Well, the peanut hamper? No, that had Tindy in it, didn't it, at the end?
Yeah, I'm going to look into that. I'll let y'all know next week. I'm going to check. Okay. Unless I forget. If I do, y'all can yell at me. But I'm going to try real hard to remember. I think I can do it. Oh, Linda Marks has a hot take here. What do we got? Linda Marks says, I think Mariner and Talyn would make a good couple and balance each other out. We kind of saw their, you know, rapport and dynamic back and forth when... That actually is what happened when Talyn, you kind didn't fully mind meld, but just kind of melded in like a little bit of balance.
That was on the Empathic Fallacies episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. So, yeah, I would like to see more scenes of the two of them. I love that they get along. I kind of thought they would butt heads. They would be, because, you know, Mariner's so, like, crazy, and Talyn as a Vulcan is very, you know, mild and subdued. But I love that they both kind of are like, oh, no, I'm going to be, like, you know, the real pushy one who's like, I'm going to be the one who's, like, going to go out there and do the things I need to do. And you know, I'll bend the rules when I need to. And I guess, like, they see that connective tissue between the two of them. But I love that they get along. It's not the obvious thing of like, oh, they butt heads. Like even here, when like Talyn's the one who like breaks the news, like Mariner doesn't get like super pissy, like it hurt. I mean, she doesn't like shoot the messenger. She's just kind of just mad at the situation, but she doesn't really blame she doesn't blame her friends. So, which is something she probably would have done in seasons 1 or 2.
Yes.
Or maybe even Agreed. 3.
She is learning. She's regressing and then learning. You know, a little bit of back and forth, but that's, you know, realistic.
So I guess let's talk about like her sneaking off. They decide that their best hope to get off of Sherbal 5 is to find the monitoring station on the planet's surface that is linked to the buoy up in orbit. And if they find it, they can press some buttons in there and make a distress signal to get help. Yep.
Reverse the polarity and bing bang.
Yeah, tech the tech.
Yeah, you gotta signal.
What do you think on the fight that she gets into on the way there when she encounters Ma'a? I guess that was the reveal. We didn't even know it was him until then.
Yeah. I like the rain of glass at the kind of the end of this fight. Mm. Which I thought was interesting.
It's something I hadn't seen before. Like I don't maybe something in sci-fi has used that, but I've never seen a fight in a glass storm.
Yeah, and I feel like glass or that sort of thing is more like in gas planets. I feel like somewhere like in our solar system, there's something that could be similar to that. And I cannot place it. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, maybe like Neptune or something. It rains glass. It rains like I think it rains Mercury somewhere. Other planets like weird shit rains.
Right. Basically.
Like,
so, yeah. So
things other than water can rain.
The way they're pointed, it's like, OK, I could kind of see that being like how that would form.
It's like a big sheet of glass in like one of the layers of the atmosphere and then it shatters.
Oh, that's interesting. That's not what I was thinking.
Okay.
Work. Katie, the weather, what is her title?
Meteorologist.
The meteorologist. But I thought she had like a kind of a catchy name. But anyway, she mentioned that it was the first time that she had seen in a while that the storms were actually counterclockwise. They're correctly moving for a storm.
Like, oh, that's
finally
neat.
Weather has been, you know, properly presented in a television show, which is weird because like it's a 50-50 chance of getting that right. You'd think it would happen more often.
Yeah, you think it would happen at least 50% of the time. It's like, are y'all doing it wrong on purpose?
Or maybe it's just that people automatically like things that go clockwise. So they just do it
subconsciously. Probably. I think you're probably... That sounds like a human psychology thing.
But this fight was good. You can tell that it was leading up to something.
They brought back the Kirk punches.
Yeah.
From the Crystal Plane. I mean, that was Temporal Edicts, actually. And then we had Buffer Time and Kirk punches the same episode. But yeah, I thought the fight was like it was very visually impressive. The backgrounds were cool. Like the blocking of the fight was cool. And then I would say like this is part of like that 5.5 minutes of what I consider like the best writing I've seen in Lower Decks. And from there to Shelter in the Cave. And
That might actually be part of a tree or something like that, given where it's at. I mean, maybe it's a cave. I don't know. It's a weird. It could even be like the inside of some sort of old like. Giant wasp nest or something.
It's like a strange shelter in a alien forest, whatever we're gonna call it. But there's some like heavy stuff ball. Some heavy stuff gets dropped in there.
Yeah, and I do have something to say, like if you want to talk about that, and then I have one thing that's sort of like, okay, I don't necessarily buy that part of it.
I guess like when Mariner tells like her story about like, I guess her explanation to Ma'a when he's asking, you know, you're Starfleet, but you're also a warrior. And there's like this, you know, I don't know you. I just been fighting with you for like 5 minutes. But even then, like, I can tell like there's a conflict. There's an inner fight within you.
I feel like that Klingons Klingons fighting somebody probably gives them a lot of insight. That's how they, you know, figure a person out. So for fighting a Klingon fighting, you know, a human is probably going to be much more informational for them than if another person was fighting you.
Yeah, you go spar with a Klingon, and then he's like, "Well, you fought well, and I can tell like you really miss your mom, and I'm so sorry." So like they just like get like this insight into your personality or something.
He could replace Dr. Miglimo. That would be great.
I mean, we've been saying he ain't a good therapist. So
yeah, I want a Klingon therapist. That would be amazing.
That would be such a Lower Decksian.
Yeah.
Idea.
Yeah.
That would be cool. What if Alexander, Alexander grew up and became a therapist?
I don't know. He seems like he might continue to need therapy throughout his life.
I know, but I feel like a lot of people like go a lot of people like try, I shouldn't make like that kind of generalization.
But I know what you're getting at. Yeah.
I think that used to be a stereotype that people wanted to work in mental health fields because they wanted to try to fix themselves or understand themselves or something like that. But like that's probably a bad generalization to make, but
as Joel said, Dr. Ma'an.
I mean, yeah, this is the best therapy we've seen on Star Trek since, I don't know, Guinan, since Vic Fontaine on DS9.
I would say Crisis Point had some like accidental good therapy.
Yeah.
That was not like on purpose though.
But we get the story from her that she was a, just, I guess like a common, you know, ambitious, bright-eyed Starfleet cadet wanting to grow up and be captain, and she looked up to her friend, who we know from TNG, Cito Jaxa, the actual Next Generation episode titled Lower Decks that inspired this animated comedy.
So, she must have been, like, super young when she joined Starfleet or something, but I'm just wondering, like, how old she is now. I didn't go to the timeline, I didn't sit down and do it, but she's, what, in her 30s?
Okay. Well, I think we can do this. We can do some real-time math for those of y'all watching live.
Oh, no.
This is super exciting. So please, everyone, like, if you're watching live, like, share the link, spread it around, be like, oh, my goodness, this dude is doing some real-time math with, like, Star Trek years and stuff. People are going to want to see this. But we know that Cito Jaxa was at the academy. Like, she had to, like, repeat a year, right? I think she was a senior in season 5 in the first duty, and then she had to redo her senior year in season 6. Then season 7, she's an ensign, she's on the Enterprise, and Picard sends her on her mission. So if, say, in season 6, Cito's senior year at the Academy, that would be 69. Yeah, 2369. If that's her senior year, that could have been Mariner's freshman year. We're trying to figure out, like, the youngest Mariner could be for all this to still work, I guess.
Right.
Like, how old she at least has to be what. So let's say, and the youngest you can take the youngest you can enter Starfleet is Academy is 16.
Right.
So if Mariner was 16 in 2369, that would mean she was born in 53, which would make her 3 years younger than Wesley Crusher. I think she'd be 28 here in this scene. She's at least, she's 28 or older, which is actually like where I kind of picture Mariners, 28 or older.
I kind of like early 30s is what how she presents herself. Although that might be the actress as well.
I think she's between 28 and 35.
Okay. It's interesting too, is that this also means that she knows Wesley Crusher, which means we could have a surprise Wesley Crusher, well, not a surprise at this point if we're guessing, little cameo or something in the next episode. Or, you know, if this is a two-parter, like, or three-parter, then it could go into next season and maybe he shows up there.
Well, Will Wheaton has said that he really wants to be on Lower Decks. Mm-hmm. Like, I think whenever, like, Mike McMahon is on the Ready Room, like, Will Wheaton is like, I really want to be on Lower Decks. And so, like, I think it's only a matter of time. he's going to show up
he's
someday.
A traveler. Like, he could be their deus ex machina that they could pull out at some point if they needed one. Him and Badgie. Yeah. Both of those now.
It's also convenient for the Lower Decks writers to have, because it's like, man, we could have, like, a traveler show up. Literally, mm-hmm. like, that's their thing. They travel. Like, they can go to any space and time. So it doesn't matter what story we're telling. It'll be easy to work Wesley in if we ever want to.
When I was on the Earl Grey podcast on Trek FM, when I guest starred, we created a 1990s animated show. Like, instead of going to movies, they went to, like, an X-Men kind of show. And we had Wesley was a floating ball of light that was just in the episode. You never saw his face. He was just sort of like Clue from, or Cursor or whatever from Tron, just this flashing light. And we had an Ensign Flipper who was just one of the dolphins in a mech suit that could get around. So it's like, okay, we had Cetacean Ops, basically. It was kind of fun.
Nice.
Star Trek Stream. It was very silly.
But what do you think of, I guess, like, when Ma'a, like, kind of, like, steps up to Mariner and kind of tells her, I guess his take on it is honor your friend by, you know, continuing to serve. It's like, she made her choice. Like, Starfleet didn't kill her. I guess, like, she chose to do her duty, and she wouldn't want you to give up.
And this is where the weird issue that I have is just, like, when she says, if being an ensign was good enough for Sito, it was good enough for me. Sito wasn't trying to just be an ensign. I mean, she clearly wanted to keep going up the ranks, and that had to have been expressed to her at some point.
Right.
You know, it's just, like, I would be like, I want to become the best captain I can be to, you know, so I can prevent something like that happening. I mean, you could see that or something, you know, just the idea of, like, I'm going to stay at an ensign. And that's what I was like, that, I don't know. There's just a little too much weight put on this. It feels like
I don't think it was like, she didn't want to, like, outrank Sito. Like, she feels like, oh, I shouldn't.
Maybe?
Like,
yeah.
But I actually, like, I really love that idea of, like, because I've always had this problem, like, the conflict of, like, okay, if Mariner doesn't like Starfleet, then why is she in Starfleet? She doesn't like, you know, following these rules and all this stuff. And then they answer that in season 3. She tries to leave Starfleet and she misses it. She wants to be back there. The thing is, she just doesn't want to be in command. She doesn't want to give people orders. And I love the wording that Mike McMahon wrote in the dialogue here when she says, like, I don't want to be a general. I want to do cool science shit. And I don't want to like order my friends to their death. Like, I saw that happen to a friend, and I can never be a captain. I never want to get a promotion. I never want to be put in a situation where I do to someone what Picard did to Sito.
Yeah. It's just the way she phrased that one thing. It's like, if they had left that part out, it kind of would have made more sense. It feels like there's a couple ideas fighting each other, but yeah.
I guess I'd say a lot of people kind of express that when people, like, get older than their parents ever were or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. Somebody in chat says maybe her rationale isn't meant to be rational. So that's true. It doesn't have to make sense.
It all rang true to me. Like, I felt like that's I could picture someone feeling this way.
Yeah. It was just like, it felt like there were two, like, different pieces of things conflicting with each other, but that's also human. So,
and humanity proved their, Tadooch?
Oh, yeah.
Is that how you say that word?
Yeah, but I think so. I like at the end when it's like, when they're walking off and just like, you said I proved my Tadooch. Like, I said your race.
Yeah, I said like, humanity did that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like, not you. That reminded me of a lot of the last scene of the first episode when she's like, I'm going to be your Tadooch to Boimler. You know, he's that back and forth. He's like, I don't want that. No, no. You know, like, it just felt like that kind of interaction. Like, she had that same rapport with him.
When she forces her friendship onto, like, we're going to be buddies, whether you like it or not.
Right. She's like a aggressive Tendy.
It was like when Ransom gave her the black pip to make her a lieutenant junior grade, like, she was like, no, I don't want this. And, like, here, like, when Ma'a does it, it's like, she's, like, accepted it. So it's like now she's a lieutenant. Like, it's like it's like an event.
This whole cave thing works really well. Like I said, that's just that one thing for me was what stood out a little bit. But I'm excited to see where this goes.
To be honest, like when I was making notes and stuff on this last night, I watched the scene a couple of times. I kept thinking about like how much I enjoyed it. And just like the direction is so good. Just like the pace. There's like some subtle like camera pans and stuff.
Yeah. And even the like just the way they look at each other. It's like, okay, it's yeah, it's a white circle with a dot in the middle, essentially. But they, the eyes seem to have really well expressed emotion for what they're saying. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they spent more time animating this part than.
Oh, I know that they had to have had. I'm convinced that they had. And I was thinking last night, I was like, man, like, I want to do like a whole podcast episode on like just the scene. I don't know if that'll ever happen. That might be insane, but I think it's possible.
We're going to need more content after.
I know, right? I'm already trying to cook up some. Yeah, we ain't getting a lot of Star Trek next year, y'all. So. Yeah.
I've got a couple.
We're gonna be scraping the barrel.
We need to sit down and actually have fun. Plan some content. Yeah.
Yeah. So just stuff.
Yeah. If you guys, if there's anything related to animation that you'd like to see us cover or, you know, bring up or whatever, yeah, just tweet me at GeekFilter or TechStrek, and let's, yeah, maybe we can have a listener. I say listener induced. That doesn't sound real. A listener suggested.
What was Pillar's script submission? Yeah, it'll be a submission. It will have a topic submission. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a Star Trek tradition. Like, that's how Michael Pillar ran a TNG and DS9. And
I submitted a script way, way, way back then. And I sent it to, who did I send it to now? I can't remember who it was, but somebody I actually know now. And so I found the letter, because I had a copy of the letter that I sent. And he's like, what did I say? What was my response? Like, you never responded to me. Oh, I guess I'm going to get a bad Yelp review.
When I was a kid, like, I wanted to like write a, I wanted to try to pitch a story to Star Trek, and I'd hear about people, you know, who do it. And, like when I was a teenager, they stopped doing the submission thing. And I was like, well, I guess I'm never going to. So,
Eric Stillwell. Well. That's who it was. He's the one who wrote, Yesterday's Enterprise.
Oh, well, great episode. You come up with make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
We can't if they keep making shows.
Well, they'll run out of letters in the alphabet someday.
Yeah, I wanted in the 32nd century, like the last scene of Discovery, as we see the Enterprise NCC-1701A3 or AZ or something,
or
like
AA.
That
makes it sound like it's like the Alcoholics Anonymous starship.
Just,
so
just two combinations, like a double digit or double letter at the end of the. Of that, just like, yeah,
when they encounter the Star Trek aliens in fighting, you know, it kind of looks like you took like worlds of Star Trek or Worlds of the Federation, whatever the book from the 80s, like it's
Worlds of the Federation,
like, yeah, let's like put all these people in like a big battle royale is kind of the idea of this planet. But I like that Ma'az approach was just like, oh, I'm gonna go fight, let's just take down the Orions, the rest of them are scared of me, they'll probably see, like, he's like already coming up with like battle plans, and then Mariner's response is like, no, we're gonna do something much harder than that. And like her plan was like, oh, we're actually gonna like unite them. And I just loved like that frame, like Mariner was like, fighting them would actually be taking the easy way out. Like we need to do the actual harder thing. And so it's just like, oh, look, that little speech that you gave me is already paying off.
I was just like, the time off. I'm like, time off? What kind of Starfleet trick is this?
They've done a good job, like, building up, like, Tindy's, I guess, Orion background enough that, like, we don't question this at all at this point. When she's like, Captain Kasmia, stand down, it's like, oh, yeah, this is exactly how this would play out, so.
Yeah.
It was kind of, like, the whole, like, you know, the unification of all of them uniting together, and, like, the Ferengi being like, well, I'll know a good deal when I hear it, so, like, you know, it was a Ferengi explanation for getting involved, and, but unfortunately, Mariner is abducted, I guess. I don't know, do you have anything else before we like, talk about, like, the tail end?
No, I just
stuff.
I enjoyed seeing them all together. I like that they started working together. Like, as the Romulan said, it's like, I'm not joining anything, but I'll cease aggressions for now.
I don't want to admit that I'm agreeing to a ceasefire, but I will stop fighting and work alongside you. But
it feels like how all of these different races would actually react, in like if this was a live action show. So I think they actually did a pretty good job with that. You know, watching Lower Decks, you have to sometimes think like, okay, if this was live action, they probably wouldn't do this thing because it's a little too goofy or whatever. So I kind of think of like Lower Decks as being through a slightly different lens. It's the same stuff is happening, but maybe just amplified a little bit more or tweaked to be funny.
Yeah, I know the part of the show's objective is, you know, not only does it have to be a Star Trek show, but there's certain, you know, certain things you need to pull off to be a successful animated comedy.
Right.
And sometimes I don't like those choices being in Star Trek, but for the most part, most of them work better than I would have thought.
Yeah. If you described the show to me like 5 years ago, I'd be like, oh, that does not sound good.
And if it's funny enough, like if it makes me laugh, I can be very forgiving. So it's just like the ones that don't make me laugh, those are the ones where I'm like, oh, did you really need to do that? But
I think I like the show a lot because my sense of humor is very much like, you know, laughing at the fact that the credits were hitting Boimler in the face and in Crisis Point, or that they stepped over the letterboxing. To me, that kind of stuff is really funny. And so the fact that they have a lot of that humor is helpful for me.
You pointed out when we watched this episode, when they jump from the cliff on top of that bird of prey to reclaim the ship. That is a bit of a long jump.
That's but really far jump.
Like an ankle-breaking jump.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if there are any humans involved.
Maybe it's not as
tall
as
it
looks like, but that is far.
I guess Boimler made that. Yeah, Boimler's got human legs, so I don't. But we don't know the gravity on this planet. It could be a little lighter gravity. So I mean, like that glass falling, like it wasn't like, you know, like going through their like whole bodies or like, you know, it's like high velocity glass. So maybe it's a light gravity planet. That's why the trees are so tall. It's like there's not as much gravity.
There, I like that. also, to kind of echo the Star Wars-ness of the other planet, this kind of felt a little bit like the tracking station that's in the middle of Endor or whatever.
It looked a lot like that.
Yeah.
That was another thing I didn't like people. Everything. I think I intentionally didn't get like a good screenshot of it last night because I was like, I don't want to look at this Endor Ewok shit when I'm trying to watch Star Trek.
I like that it can be referenced without feeling completely out of place. Unlike there was a comic book that I saw once that was, I think it was what George Lucas's original, you know, the Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they
Marvel
did
that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you look at all of their computer screens, they're Elcars, like just copied and dropped in there. Like, oh, this is like, sometimes they're upside down, but it's just like, this is just Star Trek.
Look at that.
Like, why is that? I sent it to Mike Okuda once. He's like, well, that's interesting.
I think that's on the Marvel Unlimited app. I read the first issue on there years ago. I'm going to go read some more and see if I see any Elcars. But the retaking of the bridge, you know, I guess Ma'og gets revenge over this traitor. They don't spend like a ton of time on that. And I was like, okay, like this guy took like the ship from the Klingon. The Klingon's going to be mad. Like, you know, we kind of like know all this stuff. It's kind of predictable. So it's like, just take care of it super fast.
Yeah,
make it satisfying with the cool, like the pink blood all over the face, which was, you know, it's violent as hell. So it's very Klingon, but it's also... Yeah, it looks like he's been chugging Pepto-Bismol. So it's Lower Decks comedy too. Good choices. Good choices with all that. So would that be like, you know, you go into like a room with like red painted walls.
Yeah.
And like it's kind of stressful to just even exist there.
Is that what it is for Klingons in a pink room?
Well, I think that's like why Romulans like green stuff so much. Because to them, they think that's like blood. That's like,
that's,
you know, to them, like that's like the like aggressive, scary color is green.
Yeah.
But we see back on the other planet, Freeman and Shax and Rutherford in what appears to be Nick Locarno's hangar that he's also using as a base for the mystery ship. And we get that reveal. And then it cuts to Mariner waking up on the mystery ship with Locarno.
Yeah, the minimalist ship.
Yeah. So it is an interesting interior.
I like how they drew Nick Locarno. He's got like actual differences between, you know, like he got the scruffy beard or scruffy like stubble on his face, but he's got like gray streaks in his and also at some point he got a scar above his right eyebrow or in the middle of his right eyebrow.
Yeah, it's good that they added those, you know, details to distinguish him from how Tom Paris appeared on Lower Decks in season 2,
because he could be older than Tom Paris. Probably would be.
I mean,
not a lot, but
they'd probably be around the same age, I think. Okay. But
he just had different genetics, even though they looked identical.
I mean, for all we know, that similarity might get explained in the next episode.
Yeah, I kind of hope they don't. I just like, I don't want it to be like oh, and that's why they looked exactly the same. I'm like, okay.
I would have been happy with them outdoing it, but I think that they're going to. So I'm bracing for it now. But there's two examples that I would be pretty okay with. One is that he's a transporter clone, and that's just because that's been like a recurring thing they've already established in the show. And just like, oh yeah, I was just like, I changed my last name and whatever. Either that, or he is just like he's like a twin brother, but he uses his middle name for his last name or something. And they're going to say like, oh, that's why Beckett Freeman calls herself Beckett Mariner, because her name is Beckett Mariner Freeman, and she doesn't want to go by her last name. She doesn't want to go by her parents' name in Starfleet, and neither did Nick Locarno Paris. I think that might be a possibility. That would be so weird, because you have like you have 7 years of Voyager without Tom Paris. He never mentions a transporter clone. He never mentions a brother. He never mentions anything.
And Janeway's biography talks a lot about like that she's known Tom Paris since he was like a little kid because she knew Admiral Paris. So I feel like she at some point would have referenced something about that happening. But keeping it in the Star Wars frame of reference, like we don't need a Solo movie. We don't need him to be, not everything needs to be explained.
Yeah.
A Solo movie was like, just here's a Wikipedia that entry that came to life. Like, okay, thanks. It was a good movie if it wasn't Han Solo.
Everything we ever knew about the guy.
Like yeah, the dumb name. It's like, Solo is a perfectly fine in-universe Star Wars name. There was no need to make it like a thing.
Oh, I forgot that was a thing. Like, that Imperial officer, like, he was like, you need a name. How about, On Solo?
Traveling Solo, yeah.
You just pulled that out of your ass. It was like the coolest name for like a badass space dude as Han Solo. And this guy just like just spitballed it out, you know, on the spot like that. Like, wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I should go to Helm whenever you need like a cool name for something. I don't know. I don't have any other thoughts on the reveal. I don't really have many theories. I guess I have one, but I don't know. What do you have any speculative thoughts?
Yeah, no, the only thing I can think of is that somehow it's connected to Section 31 Boimler, because he's a transporter clone. He's now kind of spun off, but I kind of am glad that I don't. I mean, like, I'm like, okay, it's going to be this, I know for sure, but no, I don't. Maybe if I just sat and watched it a couple more times, something might click, but so far, no, I'm just along for the ride, which I enjoy, actually. Especially like, you know, us doing podcasting and stuff and sometimes seeing it before people. It's like not knowing what's happening is actually kind of a luxury.
Yeah, it is. That's why like stuff like because I feel like I have to know so much about Star Trek. I have to like anytime a trailer for like a new show comes out, I go and have to screenshots of everything. And
yeah.
Anytime like there's any news, like I read like every art, anytime like an actor has been cast or a show has been greenlit or delayed or whatever, you know, I love doing that, but yeah, I do have like an obligation to stay on top of all that. But yeah, it's kind of fun with like other stuff, with like a lot of like Marvel and DC stuff. I just won't watch the trailers. I'll just be like, I'm just gonna wait till it's out and toss it on and have like no idea what the hell's going in and go in blind. And it is fun to get to do that. So I love being caught off guard and being surprised. And I'm really curious. It seems to be he's building his own fleet. He wants like his own, I think he wants to be in command of his own team. He's still kind of on like that Nova Squad thing. Like he wants to have like his group of like the elite. And so I think we're going to see like not only like that Bird of Prey that had his covert starburst symbol on it, but I think we're going to see like the Bynar ship come back and the Romulan warbird, you know, the cool like vertical warbird. So I think we're going to see like it in action, you know, fighting the Cerritos. I think we're going to see like,
it's sort of like a less noble Fenris Rangers.
Yeah. But well, that's a good question. It's like, well, what is his object? Like, what does he want like this group for? Like,
that's what
do?
I'm trying to figure. I think if we can answer that question, it'd probably fill in a lot of gaps, but that I don't know. It's like, less like we know that Ceto Jax is alive and we're going to go get her or something don't do that.
Yeah, I think her death is, it's a good motivation for Mariner, and they just should kind of like, let Ceto be Mariner's Uncle Ben, or Thomas and Martha Wayne for Batman, but
Martha and Jonathan Kent for Superman later in life.
Yeah, well, they sometimes they're alive.
Yeah, sometimes or a lot of times Jonathan Kent dies.
Yeah,
and Mom's just alive for longer.
She has better luck in most depictions. Jonathan, not so much. He's got about 50-50 odds. But yeah, I don't, like, what would he be trying? Like, what if it's just like, I just want to have like some really badass ships and we're going to do like the most amazing flight maneuvers you have ever, like, have you ever seen?
Well, he said he's going to create some trouble. So I don't think like, hey, we're going to have a air show.
Oh, you want to see trouble? Aaron, imagine like a vertical Romulan warbird doing a covert starburst. Like, I mean, what could be more troublesome than that?
Well, you'd need more than one. You, like, unless they're all doing it. Yeah, like, then it's no. See, if you get all the different ships doing that, it's not symmetrical. It doesn't look nice, like from a graphic design standpoint. Like now,
he's got it choreographed. He's been when he was in prison. He was making plans. He was cooking this up. So, or did he go to prison? I don't remember what
I don't know. I don't. Did we ever find out? I was gonna go back and watch the first duty, and I forgot to do that.
I mean,
this weekend.
I know he got in more trouble than the rest of them, and everyone else. They had to repeat that year at the academy. And then he had something that was much worse. I assume it was prison related, but it might not be. I'll double check.
It's also the 24th century, so who knows what, like, you know, what we think of prison.
By prison, I mean like their Reformation.
Right. I mean, maybe therapy, he went to New Zealand for, you know, a couple months or
something. With real Tom Paris. It's fake Tom Paris and real Tom Paris.
That's where they switched.
New Zealand.
Oh, that's where they switched. This is actually Tom Paris, and the other one is Nick Locarno, and that's how it's
been. What if Tom Paris was never Tom Paris, and Nick Locarno went to the New Zealand prison colony, and he killed Tom Paris, and he's there, like, busting rocks like he's Tom Paris, and, like, Janeway shows up, and, like, oh, so you're Tom Paris, and I guess you're coming with us on Voyager.
There's so many weird
But things. Then who would this guy be? Then how is he... Yeah, he's not Nick Locarno here. So
just switch place, like the Prince and the Pauper kind of a thing, you know. Or
this is fun, but I can be patient and wait till next week. But if anyone else has any suggestions, you know, I'm always curious to hear from y'all. So
realistic or unrealistic ideas, both are fun.
Yeah. Any final thoughts on the inner fight before we go into the Gorn eggs?
No, I think we've probably talked about most of it.
All right. Well, we have our Gorn eggs section. That's for the Easter eggs, in jokes, and continuity connections we thought are worth sharing. I'll get through these pretty quick. But starting off, the inner fight, as Jill47 pointed out at the top of the show when I was calling the episode The Inner Light instead of The Inner Fight, that is the a reference to a TNG episode. A lot of folks know The Inner
Horrible
Light.
Clothing. Picard.
You know, Picard dreamed that he, I guess, had a family on a planet that got destroyed by climate change and then it was all a dream, and he woke up and went back to normal. But it was good. Most people really like it.
I like the concept of it. It's a really interesting science fiction concept. And I think if it was made today, it would have had a lot more impact on him, because they say his brain, it feels like he literally lived a life. And that's, you don't just go back to work the next day then.
Yeah.
Maybe it
you would feel like
relatively quickly or something. Maybe it's something where your brain starts to just reset.
It must, because you got to think like,
that was like a weird dream, you know, or something.
From his perspective, he'd be like, I haven't been on this ship for 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, would be like how he's thinking about it, or however long he lived this life.
He could. There's no way he could have gone back to normal that quickly. So, yeah, I'm thinking that was our headcanon, that it just sort of fades relatively quickly, but leaves the memories there of, you know, what happened.
Aaron, you also pointed out that the anti-venom suits have a very similar design to the TOS environmental suits. Whatever these
the beekeeper suits.
Yeah, whatever these machines that are, like, on, like, the front, like, chest area, like, where the helmet connects to the suit, like, whatever that stuff
is. I'm assuming that's where, like, I don't know why you want to put it on the outside like that, though. It's, like, the, you know, air tubes and coolant and all that stuff runs through there, but I guess that'd be the only place to put it.
It was, like, controls, because there's kind of, like, knobs and stuff.
So yeah. Maybe
you could, like, adjust your suit. I mean, nothing's labeled or anything, but
whatever. Except for their names and that weird, like, it looks like somebody took a label maker and stuck it on there. I think that was their names.
That was for season 3 when they had their budget cut. Like, that's kind of going the extra mile for the original series season 3.
True.
Maybe they had a break right before they shot that one, you know. Sometimes that happens. You get like a little bit more production value because you had like a long break going into an episode. That happened when Michael Westmore designed the Cardassians for the Wounded in the Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
It came out with this like extremely elaborate design because like they had like their Christmas break and shooting or something before they shot that one, and so he's like, oh, I'm gonna do like this like really elaborate makeup that I normally would not have time for, and I would only do it for like this episode. But then because he made like this really elaborate Cardassian design, they're like, hey, we're gonna do like Deep Space Nine. There's gonna be Cardassians on that show all the time, and he was like, oh my god, that's like the hardest alien to do, and you're gonna make me do that for so many different characters.
It did get simplified. I think if you look at them, they do. Like the neck area and stuff. There's a lot of stuff that seemed like it changed.
Yeah,
subtly.
I think it got better. Or maybe I'm just more used to the later version, but that's what I prefer. The other no longer active former Starfleet people that are out and about somewhere that Starfleet is looking for before the mystery ship kills them or whatever it's doing.
Yeah.
But we had 7 of 9 who we know was no longer doing Starfleet stuff because they wouldn't let her in Starfleet and she walked out.
Even though Janeway went to bat for her, it just didn't help.
Even though Janeway threatened to quit, and Dr. Crusher, who at this point, she is hiding somewhere with baby Jack. So he's probably less
or
than
pregnant
a year old.
With baby Jack.
Yeah, she could be pregnant. Then we have Thomas Riker, the transporter clone of William Riker. Last time we saw him, he was stealing the Defiant for the Maquis, and then he went to Cardassian prison never to be heard from again until now. We still don't really know exactly the deets on him, but maybe someday. And then when they start their girls' trip plus Boimler, Talyn says, it will be 2.47 times more perilous if you remain uninformed of the detail. So love the 47.
Mm-hmm. It feels like in Discovery they were adverse to that. They would be like 46 and 48. I'm like, come on. Like, it's like they're doing it on purpose.
They had like a 47 in season one, and then they had like one in season two, and it's like they won't give me any more. I was like, just give me a 47. But I don't think there's any in Picard seasons one or two, but then they had one in three.
Oh, there might not be. Yeah, I don't know.
But I like seeing the bar Muds. I liked Harry Mudd continuing to have some presence in Star Trek, originally introduced in the original series, but most recently seen in Discovery. He would be hard to bring back for Strange New Worlds because they technically can't have Spock meet him because Spock didn't know him in Mudd.
But Spock is off doing something else and he's not there.
But they're probably going to start throwing more TOS people on Strange New Worlds. Probably like eventually we're going to have
we got Corby coming probably, so.
Yeah, I don't like Scotty and Chapel and Uhura are already in the show. They could
bring what's his name from Axanar. The one that Kirk's
Garth of Izar.
Garth of Izar, yeah, the one that Kirk was in love with, basically.
Yeah,
he could be in there somehow. Although I don't know, given that the whole fan film Axanar thing, I'm not sure what the thought process on that would be.
Yeah, they're probably, unfortunately, because I think it would be cool to use Garth for something. They're probably not going to want to use that character. But oh well. But I did like the jippers are half priced for tripods today line.
Yeah, well, that's what it was. Yeah, tripedal species
and the Baylock puppet, of course, that goes back to when we saw a puppet that looked almost just like that.
It looks worse than the cartoon. That's what's hilarious. It's like the cartoon looks more realistic than the puppet.
Yeah, the cartoon, you have like veins and stuff on the forehead.
Yeah, a little bit of a glow behind him. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Hua Cheng did this probably, but I don't know, maybe someone else. This
is what I'd imagine like would pop up at a really cheap haunted house.
Yeah. Oh, I have the toy of this guy though. I bought the Playmates action figure set that it included Baylock himself as like a little kit, and he's got like his Tranya cup in his hand. So it's kind of cool. He looks like he's drinking, came with this dude, the puppet, and it came with Kirk, the 4-inch Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have like the cardboard part that was like the background of like it was like the set of like his ship when they like go over and go inside and hang out with him. I don't have that part anymore. I still have like the three action figures themselves. I don't know what I did with the card, but I guess I threw it away because, you know, this is made out of paper and doesn't last well. But
yeah,
we were talking about Nick Locarno from The First Duty, and his symbol is, I think, a clear representation of the Culvert Starburst.
Yeah,
that he wanted to be kind of his, his big famous signature move. Look how cool I am with my squad right before I graduate the academy.
I think when this first came out, I called it the Cobalt Star Maneuver, and my brain will not unlearn that. It's not what it is, but it's just like, that's what I want to say every time. And there it is there.
You can see it here. This is the best shot that I had of it on the Klingon Bird of Prey wing, which they should take that off now that the people we like are in command of the ship. But yeah, that makes me wonder. I think that if they're going to fight Locarno's forces, they're going to be up against maybe a Romulan warbird. And I don't know what would the Bynar ship? I don't know. Maybe the Bynars have they're advanced. They could have like some crazy capabilities.
Maybe it just scrambles your computers or whatever. Like in the
that we got like that new Ferengi ship. We saw like that was a new design from a few episodes ago. So that's there. Those Cardassians we saw, we don't really know where they. I guess there's a Cardassian ship in Locarno's fleet.
Yeah, we didn't see that.
But yeah, I don't know I don't know why he has like that super powerful beam that can appear to destroy ships, but actually like beam people.
I feel like he didn't design that himself. Maybe he did, but it's like,
yeah.
That's why I feel like maybe there's somebody else involved, like a bigger boss.
I'm sure it'll all be explained next week. Maybe not. Maybe they'll save some stuff for season five. But I think they're going to wrap all this up, and then
I actually think
Section 31 Boimler, they're saving that for that's because Section 31 will happen in season five.
They kind of Locarno is going to be something separate. Talyn got saved for when they introduce it and then bring it back a season later.
Because I don't know. I don't see like Locarno having any connection to anything 31 would be doing.
No. Well, who knows. They could have recruited him.
Yeah, I mean, that would explain, the technology side. They get, the most advanced toys.
Yep. I'm just excited to find out and not really too concerned that I don't know. If this was like now to be continued next year, that would be a little bit of a different.
like Strange New Worlds giving us the best of both worlds treatment.
And the thing is, it wasn't so bad when it was best of both worlds because it wasn't that long of a wait. It was the summer. So it was like May to September or something like that. With streaming shows now, especially with the strike, who knows when they're going to come back, you know?
But thanks, everyone, for watching or listening. I hope you come back next week and talk about the finale with us and take part in the live chat. Or if you want to give us feedback some other way, you can always reply to my tweets on Twitter or my posts on, I guess you can only say tweets on Twitter, which doesn't even, I guess tweets don't exist anymore. It's X post, Blue Sky post, Mastodon post, Instagram grams. or those called grams or posts, I guess I'll call them posts, but whatever, you reply and I'll share stuff from there, or you can talk to us in the TextTrek Discord server or wherever. But I do need to say thank you to the lovely Patreon supporters. So thank you so much: Starfleet Sohel, Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchy, Joanne Robertson, John Daw, Geek Filter, Earl Grey Trekkie, Quarkspar, Benginium, Stephanie Durantes, Matthew Averett, Braxton Chuckay, and our anonymous supporters. We'll be back Friday night, 7 p.m. Central, for the live show and available to listen wherever you get your podcast. Until then, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the TextTrek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at text-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/text-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.